It's time for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870, or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Chris Van Cleve. Now, did you know that June was National Rose Month? It's an entire month set aside to celebrate everything that is the rose. And here at Rose Chat, we celebrate the rose every week by bringing you the latest news, trends, and information on growing and exhibiting roses. And I just want to let you know that we truly appreciate your support. Whether you're listening live or on demand, we're glad you're here.
We sure are. We also appreciate Blog Talk Radio for their support in promoting our broadcast. We're a staff pick today. And if you're a first-time listener, we're glad you're here. And we hope you'll come back again and again and join us as we explore the world of roses. I love all types of roses, and so does today's first guest, Cheryl Malone of Heirloom Roses. She's with us today to talk about some of the awesome programs they offer and to tell us some of the interesting roses they've hybridized. We'll also talk about a few other roses that are favorites in the gardens. Good morning, Cheryl. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you this morning.
Well, we're so glad you're here. Cheryl, our listeners would love to know how Heirloom Roses began. Could you give us a little history lesson and bring us up to date?
Of course. Heirloom Roses began in the late 1980s when John and Louise traveled to Europe to meet the European hybridizer, specifically David Austin. But previous to that, John had always had a love for roses, and it started with miniature roses. So here on the current property in Oregon, in St. Paul, a little farming community, John started his business that was called Small World Miniature Roses, and they grew roses for the wholesale trade. And by the hundreds of thousands had miniature roses. And then they took the trip to Europe and saw what was going on with the European breeders, and John felt that that would be one of the trends where the American gardeners would really have an interest in roses. So he worked with the European breeders and started importing, and to this day, the David Austin collection and the Harkness collection are some of the largest collections of roses that we have. They also fell in love with old garden roses. Hence, when the company first started, it was known as Heirloom Old Garden Roses. That was their specialty. It's a possible misconception that people think that that's all we carry, but we actually carry all varieties of roses, even the newest hybrids.
I have a long history with Heirloom myself. About 25 years ago, my husband bought me a Christmas present from Heirloom Roses. It was a gift certificate for an L.D. Braithwaite that was delivered in the spring and an Heirloom Rose apron, since I collect aprons. That apron still hangs in a prominent place in my potting shed today, so I think of you often. If you follow me on Twitter, you might have seen a picture I posted this morning. The apron's still in great shape. It's a prized possession.
That's wonderful. It's interesting. The first Austin rose that I fell in love with was L.D. Braithwaite.
Oh, it is a beautiful rose.
It is. To this day, it's one of my favorites.
Well, and thinking about the history of Heirloom, I spent hours and hours, and well, maybe more than hours, pouring through your catalogs. They were so wonderful. And I really feel like I got an education long before the days of the Internet, but I got a great education on roses from those catalogs.
We were, I believe, well-known in the industry for our catalog, especially when we started adding a picture of each rose. In the early days, the catalog was typed and printed from just a normal printer, and the pages were laid out on a kitchen counter, and the catalog was stapled together by hand, so we've certainly come a long ways. We found that with the advent of the Internet and the website, we were able to move that information into a format that was accessible at a much better way and accessible for more than just the people that normally would receive our catalog.
Oh, and that's so true. That's so true. You just have once you get it on the internet, then everyone can find it. That's a wonderful way to share and invest in other people. So good job on that. Your website is phenomenal. There's just so much there. I would recommend our people go visit. Cheryl, tell us a little bit about some of the themed gardens at Heirloom.
The gardens, we sit on 31 acres along the Willamette River, nestled in the northwest between Salem, which is the capital of Oregon, and Portland, which of course is known as the City of Roses.
Mm-hmm.
And along the river, we have about 2.5 to 3 acres of public gardens that you can walk through. And then we have another just across the road, a main road that cuts through the property, where there's a large stand of fir trees, and then the rest of the nursery sits there. So we have in total about 5 acres of public rose gardens that you can go through. So the first garden that was established were the old garden roses, and we have a 50-foot-long pergola where we have the ramblers, so the older ramblers that, of course, are in full bloom now, will only bloom just for this probably 30 to 40 or 45 days, and then they're gone, but the tunnel still exists, and it's a nice, cool place to sit, have a nice respite here in the garden. But the gardens are designed to be self-touring, and the gardens contain roses that we don't necessarily offer on a continual basis because there's 3,500 roses in the public gardens. Some of the roses are used for cutting stock because all of our roses are grown on their own root. We don't graft. So it's a repository for stock, you know, our mother plants, but also we keep the gardens groomed because we invite the public to come and enjoy all the beautiful different varieties of roses. So in one garden, you'll see roses from the Austin collection, but we have a lot of test roses because we had our own breeding program, our own hybridizing program here for many years, and so we have a lot of our seedlings. We have a AARS garden that people can see each year, the AARS winner for that year. We have a garden with a large collection of climbers. And so we've tried to place roses in a way that you can see how they would grow in an application in your own yard. And I think that's really important because we want people to say, I can do that too. I can grow that rose in my yard.
Mm-hmm. We love that. We love that. That's what we want to say, too, that you can do this, too. If we can do this, you can do this. What a beautiful
sure.
sounds like. You mentioned hybridizing. Could you tell us a little bit about your hybridizing program?
While we don't currently have an ongoing hybridizing program at this time, we do have thousands of seedling plants that are still on the property today, and those can still be evaluated. And John had a hybridizing program here that lasted for about 10 or 12 years. From that hybridizing program, we have put upwards of 60 roses on the market. One of the roses I'll be talking about today, Morning Is Broken, is from that hybridizing program. Another rose I'll be talking about is the Impressionist. It's a large climber that also is from that hybridizing program. So while we're not actively hybridizing at this time, we can still evaluate the seedlings, all of the seedlings that we have still in the ground, and we do that periodically each year.
That's good. Well, let's just move right on into Morning Has Broken. Give us a scoop on this rose.
Morning Is Broken was an early introduction for us. It's a yellow shrub rose. It really has a floribunda growth habit. It's yellow. It's very fragrant. It grows about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide. The wonderful thing about this rose is it is very, very healthy, very, very clean foliage. And it was one of the things in John's hybridizing program that he really wanted to breed for. Number one, fragrance, flower form, and disease resistance. We like to brag that this is one of the most disease-resistant roses that we have here on the property. And being in the Northwest, we do have trouble with black spot. It's a plague for us also. But we see this plant almost completely disease-free throughout the year, which is really a big plus. The fact that it's yellow and bright, you're really drawn to it in the garden, which is it's a color that I really like. I like yellow in the garden.
Oh, I do too. I've always liked yellow in the garden. I feel like it brings the sunshine in, even on dark gray, rainy days like we're having a lot of today.
There you go. That's my plan too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that rose just sounds delightful. And moving on to Impressionist, I'm totally enchanted by a vase of flowers of the Impressionist that I saw online. I truly can't imagine who could resist those blooms. So tell us a little bit about that one, too.
The Impressionist has a lot of, the parentage is very, very broad. There's a Graham Thomas and, I can't even list it. That was the one that came out. But it's a tall, upright, almost freestanding climber. Kind of reminds me of antique, although you can espalier and train it when it's young. But the really beautiful thing about the Impressionist is it is very, very prolific. And the bloom is very full. It has more than 100 petals. It opens. You never really see the stamen. It's just very, very full in the bloom. But the variation of colors from yellow to apricot to orange is, you can see that on the bush at the whole time. So if you can imagine a 10 or 12 foot wall of color from bottom to top, and that's how the Impressionist blooms. It's just a fabulous display.
You mentioned disease resistance, and I think I read that John had said one time that he started taking note of the roses that he neglected and that were thriving. So I'm so glad that he took note, because it gives us a lot of those roses that are so hardy.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yes.
Another rose that's caught my eye is the purple climber that you have, Night Owl. Tell us a little bit about that one.
I love Night Owl. I like it because it's so dark. It grows, 10 to 14 feet tall. Of course, I imagine if you didn't really ever prune it or groom it, it could probably get a little bit taller. I like it. It has few thorns, which is nice for a climber. But I love the purpley mauve, just the very, very deep color. I like the fact that it doesn't have a lot of petals. I seem to like roses with a lot of petals or very few petals. I really am a fan of the singles, which this isn't quite a single, but it's there again where your yellow gives a really bright color, a bright spot in the garden. I love these darker colors because I'm always drawn to them. They just seem to catch my eye. It's almost like a dark frame around a picture. There's something about it that my eye always catches, and I'm drawn to that dark color. And the fact that it's thornless, you might try growing something like that close to a doorway or a walkway if you like to have roses, close to the front of your home. It would be a good choice for that.
Mm-hmm. It is a rose that definitely catches your eye and would make a lot of impact in the garden for sure.
I like it because it's dramatic, yes.
Very dramatic. I love that about it. Another one that caught my eye this year, and I actually bought three of them, was Living Easy. I bought one for me, for my daughter, and for my daughter-in-law. And I have to tell you that last week I had a little impromptu garden tour, and I have a lot of roses. Not all of them are blooming, but I have nearly 200. And as our guests were leaving, they looked around and said, well, if I have to pick a favorite, and I had not asked, so she was obviously excited to talk about it, she said it would be the Live and Easy Rose. She saw that one, and it just caught her eye because it does stand out. So tell us a little bit about Living Easy.
What I love about Living Easy is that it, especially here in Oregon, it's very, very prolific. It blooms. It's a real heavy bloomer. I'm very fond of the Harkness roses,
mm-hmm.
and I think what I like about it is that it doesn't seem to fade like some of the oranges can, or you know, that color, and it stays manageable as far as its size, anywhere from 3.5 to 4 or 5 feet, which I think is a very manageable size for a rose in the garden. But I love the fact that the foliage is very, very dark green, and then you've got this vibrant orange color, and the contrast on the plant is beautiful. Again, another color that I'm always drawn to, the oranges and the apricots, I just love. It's very, very clean for us here in Oregon. And by clean, I mean it seems to have a lot of built-in disease resistance, which is nice.
Well, I'm looking at mine right now, and it is stunning, and it had its first flush, and it's just covered with bud again, so it obviously repeats very quickly.
Yes. I think that's probably why Weeks is calling it, it's known as an easy-to-love rose. I think and I would say it certainly is easy to love.
And it's really an eye-catcher for sure.
It is. It is very much so.
Cheryl, you have several collections of roses listed on your website, and one of them is the English Legends collection. Could you tell us a little bit about those roses and how they differ from the other roses that you have?
John had an agreement with the Harkness family, and being a history buff and spending time in England himself, he had an agreement with the Harkness rose firm that he could name a collection of roses after English historical either people or events. So this English legend series of roses that we have really are roses from the Harkness family, and they vary in size and shape and color. A lot of them are floribundas. So when you see English legend, that really just means a named collection, like Easy to Love, but there's a lot of different roses in the Easy to Love collection, whether it be a hybrid tea or a floribunda. So in that sense, when you see a rose like Lawrence of Arabia or Live and Easy or the Betty Harkness, any of those roses in that collection, they may be a floribunda or a hybrid tea, but because John was able to name roses for something that he loved, then we've developed this English legend, group of roses that are really varied, from climbers to ground covers, pardon me, to then beautiful stately hybrid teas.
Oh, the pictures are just lovely of this collection. So,
thank you.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Well, Cheryl, let's move on to the Saturday Rose Academy. I love it that you do this. What a great way to invest in the next generation of rose growers and to take the mystery out of growing roses. So if someone is intimidated about growing roses, they can come for a class, or how do the classes work?
The classes are open to the public. Right now we have them scheduled for about one day a month. We are planning on changing that in the future. We will have what's known as the Heirloom Roses Learning Center. It's a new area that we've turned into. It was part of our sales cottage, so when you come to the nursery, you can shop in the public greenhouse, and we had a gift shop that we called our sales cottage. Well, we've revamped a large area of that into what's known now as our learning center. This will be open to the public, to garden clubs, to rose societies, master gardeners groups, free of charge, so they can come in and conduct classes. we can either provide the content for those classes, or they're welcome to use our sound and video equipment and have their own classes there. But the Saturday Rose Academy focuses on, number one, educating people about roses, how they really can be a wonderful companion in your gardens. They can be the single focus of a garden, or they can be mingled with, of course, perennials and annuals. And we try to teach them that they're not really the fuss budgets that they kind of get a bad rap for. So some of our classes are helping them appreciate how to fertilize your roses properly, pest and disease identification and control. We also have planting techniques, transplanting techniques, proper pruning, fall cleanup, cleanup in the garden. We talk about weeds. And really, there is no subject out of bounds if it has something to do with roses. If a person wants to come to the gardens and learn about roses, we answer all questions. It doesn't have to even be on a specific topic that we've chosen for that day. So it's a great way to help people to get them out in the garden. In our pruning classes, we take them out there and we actually hands-on let them see how to prune their roses, which has really been a big help for people, because they often either inherit a rose when they move into their home, or they remember that grandma grew roses and they want to grow roses the way grandma did, but they just don't have a clue even how to get started, and sometimes something like pruning is a little intimidating. So we bring them here and show them how to do it hands-on.
Oh, I love everything that you just said about that. I applaud you for the great work on that. Maybe we can get some of those classes online at some point to share with others.
Exactly.
So many people that when I tell them about my garden, one of the first things I see in their face is like, oh, I could never do that. And that's what Rose Chat is all about. We want to show people that they can have beautiful roses. So thank you so much for the education program. Outstanding.
You're welcome. Sure.
Well, Cheryl, I can't let you go without talking about Rose Days. In my life, 3 years ago, my sister traveled to your area for work, and unbeknownst to her, got caught up in Rose Festival and Rose Days. And she told me the whole time she was there, she felt so guilty because I wasn't there. And person. So after that, my husband and I put your Rose Days on our bucket list, and you're getting to the top. Might even be next year we'll come see you. I was reading about Rose Days 2013, and you have a lot going on. Share some of the highlights for us.
We do. Well, probably one of the most exciting things about Rose Days that's very different this year is a change in ownership. And this is probably the first broadcast of this news. Louise Clements Louise and John, of course, had the company for many years. And as many people know, John passed away in August of 2007. And while Louise loves roses and loved her time at the nursery, her family was growing, her children were having children, and their children were having children, so the story goes on. But she really wanted to look towards retirement. So she met a young gentleman by the name of Ben Hanna, who is a passionate gardener, has a love for plants, learning to love roses. He has some experience with roses, but Ben and his wife, Cara, had a dream of their own to own a nursery one day. And Ben and Louise became acquainted, and so Heirloom now has a new owner, Ben Hanna, who is young and full of energy and has great marketing skills, and Louise is enjoying retirement. So one of the features for Rose Days is come and meet the new owner, Ben and Cara Hanna, and we also have, on top of that, we have... I'm really excited this year to host a group called the Northwest Rose Historians, and that's exactly what they do. They've really taken their focus is on the history of roses, especially roses that are found here, and roses that were carried over on covered wagon and that were here in this area and have roots with families. And so in this presentation that they're going to be giving on Saturday for our Rose Days, they're going to be talking about the Pioneer Roses of Oregon. So the focus will be on Madame Caroline Testu, that rose, which was distributed widely in the Northwest, specifically in Portland. I believe it was in the 30s. And then the nursery itself is located in an area called the French Prairie. And so they're going to be talking about roses, historical roses from this area. And then our special guest is 103-year-old Margaret Morse. And there is actually a rose, the Nottinger Morse rose, that is, I believe it's a moss rose, and they're going to be talking about that. So we're really pleased to have the Northwest Rose Historians, along with a woman who makes Swarovski crystal jewelry for the Rose Festival Court. The Rose Festival is the very large presentation you are celebration that they have in Portland with a parade, and they have a Rose Festival Court, so they have a queen of Rosaria. And so Leah McWhorter has Sophisticated Beads. She's going to be here with her beautiful crystal jewelry. We're going to be serving wine. Oregon is becoming very well known for its wine, so we'll have some premier wines here for tasting. We'll have the Rogerson Clematis collection. Clematis, of course, are great companions for roses. So what better group could we have here? And they're devoted to education and preserving clematis. So it's a lot of the found clematis that are in this area, and we are really happy to have them. And then we've got a group, Rosie Sullivan, who has probably the most premier top-notch perennials and annuals in the valley. We have her product here, and it's just a full 2 days of celebrating the roses, and we're so pleased because this year the gardens are showing off fabulously. We've had bloom for about 3 weeks, so we are thrilled.
Oh, my. I am completely drooling here. This just sounds like heaven to me. One of my favorite parts of growing roses is the history. So you are going to hit it on all sides.
Yes, thank you. We're looking, yes, we're trying to have it be a well-rounded group so it appeals to interests, you know, a varied interest.
Cheryl, this has been a delight. We're so glad you came to chat with us on Rose Chat, and we hope your Rose Days is so successful. Please come back soon and talk with us again.
Thank you, and thank you so much for inviting me. And if anybody has more interest in that event, click onto the website, and there's a brief description. And, of course, everybody's invited to come to the gardens. We look forward to seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find more about the beautiful collections of roses available at Heirloom Roses, as well as full details on their upcoming events at heirloomroses.com.
Now, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Bob Martin on getting started exhibiting roses. If you've ever had an interest in exhibiting roses, stay with us. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
Hi, this is Jackie D'Elia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Well, there are probably more rose shows in the month of June than in any other month of the year. And, you know, so many people grow roses and have an interest in attending rose shows and even possibly exhibiting roses. So Bob Martin is joining us now. Now, he's been exhibiting roses for I don't know how many years, and I guess you could say that he wrote the book on exhibiting roses. His publication, Showing Good Roses, is a much sought-after book for the beginner and experienced exhibitor alike. Now, he's the keeper of Rose Show records over at roseshow.com. Now, this is a valuable source and a resource for Rose Shows, for Rose Show results, as well as what the top roses for exhibition are with his annual publication of a guide that spells out what the top exhibition roses are. So let's go ahead and bring him on. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Good morning, Chris. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so glad you could join us for a few minutes today. Now, with so many rose shows being held in the month of June, I wondered if you could just share with our listeners a few tips for the beginning exhibitor.
Well, there are 46 rose shows in the month of June. I counted them up, and about a third of the rose shows in the country take place in June. So the beginning exhibitor, the best tip I have is to simply go do it. You have roses in your garden that are coming into bloom. You think they're beautiful. If you think they're beautiful, a judge is very likely to think the same. And so the key to showing roses is simply to do it, to take them to the show.
Wow.
We have at roseshow.com, there is a show schedule which shows what the shows are, and I'm looking at it, and they're all over the country. So this is Rose Month, and the shows are in full bloom.
That's right. Now, how many years have you been exhibiting roses?
Well, I'm counting them up, a little over 25. I won my novice trophy. That's where you go, and we were all novices once. I won my novice trophy in 1988.
Wow! Tell us, can you tell us about that first exhibiting experience? How it was when you first got to the show hall, and did someone come help you, or?
Well, actually, I won my first show was in 1986, so. It took me a couple of years before I even won anything at a rose show, so you have to start. My first show, I spent the night before riding all over the city looking to buy vases for my roses. And I wound up showing up that morning at the rose show with a cardboard box full of vases. I didn't know that the society provides the vases. So, you know, in terms of starting off, I started off where everybody else did, which is I didn't know anything. I didn't even know that they provided the vases. But I entered and won four or five blue ribbons and was very pleased and kept coming back until I was able to finally win a novice trophy. And by 1991, I finally won my first Queen of Show.
Wow. Well, I can tell you, as someone who is still in pursuit of the queen here in Alabama, that is definitely something to strive for. You know, I guess it's all about excellence, achieving excellence in your own garden, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it is. I mean, that's what you're trying to do is, I mean, you're trying to get better. I mean, the thing I really love about roses, one of the things I love about roses is that roses, you put a little effort into it, you get this enormous return. And I have been spending, you know, I've spent 25, 30 years now basically, actually it's more like 40 as I think about it, growing roses and wondering how wonderful they can be, and they just keep getting better. So showing roses has brought that out with, you know, in my case, because you go to a rose show and you see how wonderfully beautiful they can be. I mean, if you don't do anything, roses are beautiful. But if you do a little, they're even more so.
Yeah, that's true. Jolene Adams was on the show last year, and she referred to them as poodles. She said, you know, by themselves, they're pretty, but you can sure dress them up.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, for the first-time exhibitor, like you said, just grab your blooms and go to the show. At every show I've ever attended, they have a book or a guide for each and every show that is helpful. Can you tell us a little bit about how those shows are developed?
Yeah, there's always a show schedule. The show schedule lists the classes that are available, and the show schedules are typically available online. The society that sponsors a show will typically have a website. So if you go onto their website and download the schedule and read the schedule to see what classes exist. And so what you need to do is cut roses. You know, you look at the roses in your garden and compare that to the classes, and then you take them to the show. I mean, my best advice, the one mistake most exhibitors make, first-time exhibitors, is they don't take the entire rose to the show. They cut too short of a stem. So you can always cut off a stem. You just can't add to it. And so cut the longest stem that you can to take your specimen to the show, and then take it to the show. And the other piece of advice is to get there early. Normally, entries at a rose show are received from at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning or Sunday, depending on when the show is. And so you want to be there early. And I was never a morning person. But my mentor, who I asked to show me about showing roses, came over and spent the night. And I mean, he was up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he roused me out of bed and says, "You know, we got to be there at 6 o'clock." And I said, "You're crazy. Why do I want to do that? And what, we have 12 entries?" He says, "You're always there early, so you get there early." And that's true, particularly of a newer exhibitor, because most shows will have somebody there to help. Or even experienced exhibitors are willing to help if you ask them early, if you ask them in the 10 minutes before closing when they're racing to get their last entries in, they're not in a position to be able to help. But there'll be somebody there to help if you get there early, show you where the vases are, how to make your entry, how to fill out the tags, and the other details that you have in order to get it in. So cut a long stem, put it in water, travel carefully with it, and get there early. That would be my best advice.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly some sound advice for folks. I remember the first time I entered a rose show, I didn't follow any of those rules and showed up late, and you know, someone was very gracious and kind to me and showed me how to enter and how to fill out that tag. You know, every rose show has a little different way of filling out their tags, and it was a very, very enlightening experience. One other thing that several people have mentioned to me is the importance of once you enter your blooms in the show, that if you're a member of a rose society, one of the best things you can do is clerk the show, actually go around with the judges. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, absolutely. The very first rose show I attended, I had joined a society, and I came to the one I described I brought the bottles to. I was asked, in fact, Louis Decimero, the great exhibitor, was in charge of the clerks at that show, and he said, "Bob, would you like to clerk?" And I said, "Well, what's that?" He says, "Well, they'll show you what that is." And so I signed on. I was assigned to two judges, and I recall walking into that showroom with Louis, and I looked, and my eyes got wide, and I said, "Oh, my goodness. I thought I knew everything about roses, and now evidently I don't know anything." And so I began learning just simply by trailing after the judges. applying. They judged the rose. They awarded ribbons, and in those years we actually had ribbons, and we tied them onto the entry tags and did what the judges told you. And you were get the opportunity to sit there or stand there and listen to them discuss the roses. And in that discussion, you could see, you know, what they were looking at, what was good about a particular entry, what wasn't as good about the entry. And it's the absolute best way to learn how to show roses is to clerk at a rose show.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you publish an annual guide to the top exhibition roses, and it's called Horizon Roses. I think our listeners would be interested. You know, there's such a buzz about miniature, mini flora varieties of roses, and I thought it'd be good today if you could share with us maybe some of the top miniature and then the top mini flora roses that people should be looking at if they want to become a serious exhibitor.
Well, let me suggest that your listeners go to roseshow.com, and when you go to roseshow.com, you can click on we have photos, which actually show pictures of the top roses, and they're sorted by their rating, their number, and those numbers are established basically by the show results. And so when you're looking at miniature roses, you'll see that the number one miniature rose, mini flora rose, is Whirlaway. Whirlaway is a fabulous white rose with multiple petals, beautiful form, and hybridized by David Clements. Dr. John Dickman is second, Foolish Pleasure, Abby's Angel. People love Abby's Angel. It's red and yellow and multiple colors, absolutely gorgeous. The rose Shameless, which is very similar to Baldo Villegas, named after Baldo, who is on your show. All outstanding roses. One I hybridized, Buttercream, has been near the top of the list for the last 10 or 15 years, and I modestly think it's the very best.
It's a beautiful rose, I'll tell you that.
It is an extraordinary rose, and very pleased to have introduced its parents. People say I created the rose. No, I introduced the parents. Anyway, and with respect to miniatures, the miniature rose that has swept the rose world is Joy. I recall in Horizon Roses, Peter Alonso, the great exhibitor of miniature roses, summarized his review by saying, "Joy to the world, this rose has come." And it is an absolute spectacular rose. It is now the number one exhibition miniature, both individual specimens and as sprays. It has moved ahead of Bee's Knees, which had been number one prior to that, and there's also Irresistible. Fair Hope had been number one for, as long as I can remember, 10, 15 years, has moved down to number four. And so all those pictures are at roseshow.com, and the pictures are useful also because they're taken at exhibition stage. They show what the rose should look like if you're going to be showing the rose. Now, a piece of advice for your listeners, and this is something I learn in practice, if you look at the picture of the rose, this is when the rose was judged. And let's say you're cutting the rose on Friday, you're trying to figure out what the rose is going to look like the next day. If you go out into the garden on Friday or Thursday and say, "Oh, wow, look, that rose is perfect. That rose looks just like the picture. The judges are going to award that rose." You have to keep in mind that you're going to be showing that rose a day or two later. And so you want to cut a rose tight, wherein it's not fully completed its opening, so that it's like throwing a forward pass, so that it's right there when the judge arrives. And that's one of the skills of exhibiting, but it's something to keep in mind when roses are being selected, as they're going to be judged sometime in the future and not at the time that you're cutting it.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Whirlaway and Joy. You know, both of those roses are bred by David Clemens, and he's from right here in Alabama, and we are very proud of his introductions. But, you know, he's got three on this list, it looks like. Also, Foolish Pleasures on here as well.
It is. He's got that, and he has some extraordinary roses. I grow many of his roses. I've known David for years. As a matter of fact, years ago when he first started growing roses or hybridizing roses, he sent me Ruffian, which is one of his very first. And I have a long familiarity with thoroughbred horses, so I immediately recognized that he had named the rose after a horse, I recall. Emailing myself, oh, you've named it after a horse. He says, oh, you know, and then he intended to do all of that. So all of his roses are named after horses except for Joy, which is named after his mother.
Yeah, yeah. He recently posted a picture on Twitter or Facebook of his mom and enjoying roses. Huge bouquet of Joy, and he's a great guy, up and coming. I guess you could say he's arrived in the rose world.
Yes.
Yeah. for this Rose of Joy, I tell you, I've never attended a rose show that since its introduction I haven't seen it on the awards table. But now I want to talk just a little bit about Horizon Roses and when the next issue is due out.
Now, Horizon Roses this year celebrates its 30th anniversary. I went back and finally did the research to see when it was established, and it was exactly 30 years ago this year. What we do in Horizon Roses is gather up comments by the top exhibitors in the country. And last year I had over 80 exhibitors comment. And what I do is I send them a list of roses that have been introduced in the last 5 years. And we concentrate on hybrid teas, miniatures, mini floras, and floribundas, because those are the classes that the exhibitors typically grow. And so I will send them a list of the roses that have been introduced in the last 5 years, and they will comment in their own words on the rose in their garden, how it performs. So you learn not only how it grows and how it's going to show and whether or not it's going to have the form that's required, and also comments come in on disease resistance and vigor and so on. So if you want to really learn about the new roses, Horizon Roses is the way to learn about them. And I typically send out those inquiries. In fact, they'll go out in 2 weeks. And we'll collect them up. And years ago, the publication was called the Autumn Checklist of Horizon Roses. And I mentioned that because typically it comes out, the new edition will come out in September. And at that point, we will have compiled them, and we've begun to publish them in an e-book, electronic versions with pictures, which was an innovation last year. The existing edition can be ordered through roseshow.com. There's a place you click on in order to get information on ordering it, and then the new one will come out in September, which will describe the new roses. And I've just put together the list of new roses, and although, you know, we often complain that there aren't that many new roses, actually what I do is I drop off the roses that are now more than 5 years old and I add the new ones, and I can tell you that I added more than I dropped off. So there are a lot of new roses to be considered, and we usually find several individuals around the country who are growing them. And they report on them. Typically, an exhibitor who is into growing new roses will have 20, 25 or so of them in their garden, and we get that number of comments from them.
That's incredible. I can't wait to get the latest version of Horizon Roses. It's always a great read. I love some of the colorful comments that come out in that
public. I don't edit the comments that much, and so some of the comments are pretty droll. And I've regarded it as a fun read. I enjoy getting the comments in and standardizing them and then organizing them. I organize them alphabetically. I used to organize them by area, but it's just simply to do it alphabetically. But I do indicate in each case where the exhibitor's from. And the one thing that you promptly learn in showing roses or in growing roses is that a rose that does well in your yard may not do well in somebody else's yard. It just roses vary throughout the country. And so it's useful to look through the list of the commentators or reporters who are listed at the front of the program, identify people who are in a climate similar to yours, and pay more close attention to their comments, so that if you're in Alabama, the comments of somebody in Washington or Oregon, I will tell you, are not necessarily applicable.
But that's very true. Well, Bob, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your day to speak with us on Roast Chat Radio today. And, you know, Bob's website is roastshow.com. I want to encourage all our listeners to go out and take a look at the site, and you can order Horizon Roses, that publication there. And we use this site every week to compile our Roast Show Roundup, the list of Roast Shows that we announce on this show every week. And Bob, again, congratulations on 30 years of Horizon Roses, and I know your participation in that has been valuable, and as well as the Rose Exhibitors Quarterly, which you are the editor of for the American Rose Society. I want to thank you again for that as well. We appreciate your time today.
I wanted to mention that, Cliff. One quick thing on that is that there's, in fact, we have a Facebook site for Rose Exhibitors Forum now also. So that's the American
awesome.
Rose. Yeah, that's the American Rose Society quarterly publication that is directed to Rose Exhibitors, and that's another great source of information for showing roses.
That's great. We'll put a link of that out on our Facebook page so folks can jump over there and check that out. Thanks again, Bob. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you.
Hey, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with our weekly roundup of Rose Shows being presented around the country. So stay with us.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the Rose Photography Contest, visit ars.org.
Hey, time to mark your calendars. June is a busy month for rose shows. Here are some of the shows that are happening next week. On June the 6th, the Portland Rose Society in Portland, Oregon is having their show. Then on June 8th, there's several shows. Des Moines Rose Society in Des Moines, Iowa. The Idaho Rose Society in Boise, Idaho. The Belleville Rose Society in Belleville, Illinois. The Southampton Rose Society in Southampton, New York. The Columbus Rose Society in Columbus, Ohio. The Toledo Rose Society in Toledo, Ohio. The Corvallis Rose Society in Corvallis, Oregon. The Rogue Valley Rose Society in Grants Pass, Oregon. And Del Chester Rose Society in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. Then on June the 9th, we have five shows listed. Hubbell Rose Society in Eureka, California. Omaha Rose Society in Omaha, Nebraska. Long Island Rose Society in Oyster Bay, New York. The Western Reserve Forest City Rose Societies are having their show in Parma, Ohio. And last but not least, the Reading Berks Rose Society in Reading, Pennsylvania. And you can check out a full listing of the shows, roseshow.com.
Wow, Teresa, Bob was right. There are... 46 rose shows this month? That's incredible.
Oh, and I do tell people to go to rose shows. I mean, to walk into a room of beautiful roses that are homegrown there in your local area is a wonderful, wonderful time.
Oh, it is. And, you know, the local rose show is really the what I call just home base for the American Rose Society, in that, you know, that's what can be grown in your area. Most of the roses that are on display there, I would say 99% of them, were grown in gardens within, you know, 10 or 20 mile radius of that rose show. And And, you know, it's important to for people who want to grow roses to go to shows and see what can actually be achieved in their own garden right there in their own hometown. So it's a great way. I want to encourage everybody to go out to roseshow.com and check out the rose shows that are coming up, I'm sure, in an area near you. Teresa, it's National Rose Month. My goodness, June is bursting with rose shows and with roses in many people's gardens. It's a great way to encourage people to grow roses with this whole month set aside to grow.
I love all the attention that a rose gets in the month of June. So all these things that we love, we can just chat about them, and other people are chatting about them too. So, you know, make a big splash of information about our roses that we love so much.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I want to encourage our listeners, you know, June being National Rose Month, I want to encourage you to celebrate roses this month by, you know, helping someone to plant a rose or teach someone how to care for their roses. And most certainly, I think my number one mantra on growing roses is sharing the blooms that you produce with those around you. There's no greater joy, really, than to present someone with beautiful rose blooms, and just to see the expression on their face really sums up why I grow roses and why I created Rose Chat Radio for you and for all those that listen and want to grow roses.
That is such a benefit. We grow them, and then getting to share them with someone. Like Chris said, the reason that I grow roses is because someone, when I was a teenager, shared a hand-picked bouquet with me, and I never forgot it. And so I, this year, have made an even larger commitment to share roses. And just last week, I shared a bouquet with one of our shut-in friends in a nursing home. And in the day of text and email, I received something special, her handwritten thank you. So it meant so much to her that I actually got something in the mail. So that just made it even more special for me. So I gave a gift to her, and then she probably gave one right back to me.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'll tell you, Teresa, roses have worked very well for me. You know, as a teenager, I used to cut blooms from my mom's roses and took them to a girl in high school that I had my eye on. And she used to tell me, "Oh, thank you so much, Chris. I just love these roses. I just love you. And I'm going to keep them forever." And you know what? She did.
How did that work out for you, Chris?
Well, you know, we just celebrated our 28th anniversary. And those roses have worked out pretty well for me in my life. And, you know, they bring, just as my beautiful wife brings great joy, so do the roses in our garden as we share them with those around us. I want to thank our listeners for joining us today for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. You know, we'd love to hear your comments and feedback anytime about any of our broadcasts, and we encourage you to send us an email at grow@rosechat.info. You can even find us on Twitter. All you have to do is just follow the Rose Chat hashtag. You can like Rose Chat Radio on Facebook, and be sure and check out our website, rosechatradio.com. You'll find a full archive of all previous broadcasts there. Now, we believe, truly believe, that becoming a member of the American Rose Society is a decision you won't regret, and we encourage you to check out their website at ars.org.
Well, it's been so fun to be with you today, but until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
I didn't know what Bob would be like or anything like that. And he did great. You there still?